Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very happy Sunday evening to everybody. It's March Madness. We're in the thick of it. It's Sunday, March 15th. The brackets have just been announced earlier today. For those of you who listen to us and participate on the Discord, or those of you who don't earn it and are interested in joining us on the Discord, we actually have a March Madness bracket. I got my baby crying in the background, so my apologies for that. We're going to do a podcast here. It's been a while. I want to thank Nick and Troy for joining us today. So we have Nick on and we have Troy from the Troy Talk podcast for USC on YouTube. Always great to have him here. And we're going to talk a little USC and we're going to talk a little March Madness. Nick, how are you doing?
Chase, I'm great. Best month of the year, bar none. Just love March and, stoked to dive into the bracket here.
And Troy, thanks for joining us. You just got on, so no pre-gaming with Troy. How you been?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chase. Been doing well.
Good. Great to hear. And I'm going to pause my mute myself when I'm not on because the baby's a little noisy here. But I guess let's do it in this order. Maybe we should talk about we'll talk about the sad stuff with USC last. Let's talk about the brackets and the tournament. And, Nick, why don't you just – what's your overall impression? You know, we saw how the weekends turned out with the conference tournaments, the champions. Just give me your impression of the last few days and the decisions we saw made today.
Yeah, felt it was a pretty non-controversial selection show, in part just because of the collapse of bubble teams over the last several weeks. The first four out didn't seem to have much of a case for inclusion. And, I guess the thing that was kind of up in the air was the Miami Ohio selection, given that they lost in the quarter final of their conference tournament, but were undefeated prior to that without really any quality wins. They did end up making it, and they are in Dayton playing Coach Enfield's team, the SMU Mustangs. So that's interesting there. Beyond that, I think it's a similar story to last year. You have very dominant teams at the top, a really strong crop of one seeds led by Arizona, Michigan, and Duke being the number one overall seed. It seems like you have more of the haves and the have-nots in the sport, and the elite teams through NIL and the portal are getting even better, which should lead to fewer upsets in the actual bracket. But then again, you never really know with March Madness. So I'll be curious to see how that plays out.
So Troy, just looking at the KenPom rankings, the top 37 teams in KenPom all got in. Then you go to the top 47 teams, and the ones that didn't make it were Auburn, which just finished one game over 500. They were on the last four out. Oklahoma on the last four out, four games over 500. Then Cincinnati, Indiana. Basically, the top, if you were in the top 47 of KenPom and you won 20 games, you're in the NCAA tournament. Just interesting to see how that worked. You have any kind of headline takeaways from this weekend and kind of what you saw today?
Well, I wish that would have been the case for when USC got left off the bubble the million times it feels like in the last 10 years. The biggest takeaway I had, very similar to what Nick said, like it's very top heavy. And I really think there's probably only eight teams that I think can probably win it this year. And it's kind of a bummer that the like 12 seeds, 13 seeds that I'm usually a big fan of. I didn't think they got good draws. For example, like High Point against Wisconsin, like that's absolutely brutal, although a very fun game. Hawaii against Arkansas. Hawaii is like a super fun team to watch with the way they play their defense. I don't think this is going to be a big year for that 12 seed. I think it's going to be probably pretty chalk. And unfortunately, I'm going to have a lot of ones and two seeds in the Final Four and the Elite Eight for sure.
They always come up with these interesting stats. I think they're a little bit skewed by final results of the season, including the tournament. But they say if you're not in that, you need to really be a legitimate candidate to win the championship, you need to be like top 22 and KenPom in both offensive rating efficiency, defensive rating efficiency. How many teams fall into that category? Well, the technical answer, I think, is actually only seven. Duke, Arizona, Michigan, Florida, Houston, Iowa State, Illinois. Actually, Illinois is not in on defense, so it's only six. Then if you expand it to 24, you have Michigan State you include in there. If you look at just top 30 in offense, top 30 in defense, we're talking about efficiencies. You can, you'd include the ones we just discussed. Also, you can include Connecticut. Vandy just misses on defensive side. Virginia would be in. I cannot imagine Virginia actually being competitive for national championship. But that's basically the list. Texas Tech actually is interesting because it's kind of wrong. It's Louisville actually, 19th ranked offense, 25th ranked defense. Maybe an interesting team to choose for if you're going to pick upset teams. But yeah, I'm looking right at the top here. It'd be very difficult for me to imagine any of the teams other than Duke, Arizona, Michigan, Florida, Houston, Iowa State, and to me, Illinois, winning the championship. And even to make the Final Four, it's going to be interesting because they've loaded the South with those three teams. Florida, it's correct. It's Florida, Houston, and Illinois are all in the South. That's right, Nick. So that means, of the top seven, three are in the top, or three are on the same in the same region. Two of them are going to have in more clear paths. Out west, Arizona's path looks particularly kind of easier. Duke's interesting because they have some injuries and they have a potential Sweet 16 matchup with St. John's, although the St. John's offense is interesting. And we have a ton of offensive players, and it's Rick Pitino, their offense has not been stellar. So from that standpoint, a lot of interesting aspects to the tournament. Any thoughts or surprises, Nick, as we go through the conference tournament? How much do those even matter? The fact that Michigan lost today to Purdue, that I mean, I would not have anticipated that happening. Purdue really struggled with a very short, limited UCLA team that was missing basically its two best players for most of that game, and Purdue struggled to pull that out at the end. Arizona's looked like just a buzzsaw. Duke, struggled with Virginia but was able to pull it out. And then Arkansas has been a bit of a surprise team here, and Acuff is starting to look like maybe he has an argument for being a top three freshman with DeBansa and Boozer rather than Peterson. Any thoughts just in general from the conference tournament results?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything too groundbreaking there. Arkansas didn't have the best draw. Like they, or I should say the toughest draw. They had a pretty easy draw, avoided Florida. Had that Ole Miss team that they got through in the semifinals. So, I don't really elevate them too much, but credit to them for winning the games that they did. The only thing that really was striking to me was the Purdue Michigan thing and how usually they have the bracket and they don't reward the team that wins the conference tournament with a seed upgrade. Whereas in this case, Purdue did rise to a two and Michigan State did fall to the three line. So I think that was somewhat of a notable change in the committee mentality from prior years, and I think it's deserved. But then again, I feel like Purdue, they do this every year where they kind of fade late in the year and then get their act together, kind of by tournament time, and then are kind of competitive. Like I think a lot of people thought they were going to lose to High Point last year, come down, make the Sweet 16, and give Houston a pretty tough game in the Sweet 16. So, they're the two this year instead of a four, but I imagine they'll be win a couple games and whatnot here, but. Yeah, I think only other takeaway was really impressed with St. John's, just dominating UConn the way they did, and they look like a, another pretty tough out, and Duke would potentially get them in the Sweet 16 round, which would be a pretty fun game.
So Troy, speaking of that St. John's team, five seed. I'm not sure where, if that's the appropriate seeding or not for them, but they win, they finished the regular season as the best record in the Big East. So I think they won the regular season Big East. They win the Big East Conference Tournament. The Big East also has UConn in as a two seed. They play, some really big out of conference games. The only other team from the Big East, Villanova, I mean, this is a conference, the Big East, which has had won, four of the last whatever nine national championships between Connecticut and Villanova, and yet you're seeing only these teams at the top. You've got to think that NIL is an impact here. Are we seeing in your mind, Troy, that the Big East is maybe not on the same level going forward as the other Power Four conferences that have full-blown football programs?
No, I think that's probably right. It's pretty remarkable to see a Big East champion at a five seed. And granted, I've watched a little bit of St. John's, and they either look really, really good or really, really bad. So I guess I kind of understand that, and the fact that there's only three teams. But the fact that they beat UConn was pretty good, albeit I think they lost to Marquette and had some shaky losses coming down the stretch. But yeah, that's something that kind of stood out to me, and I really hope it's not the case. I hope the Big East can kind of find a way to come back. But I mean, seeing how bad Marquette was this year, Villanova's kind of mediocre, even at like the 8 or 9 seed that they got. I always love seeing those Big East teams, be good and kind of make March Madness run. So hopefully they kind of, figure it out. But it is looking like it's more of an SEC Power Conference kind of situation right now.
Yeah, and Nick, before we started the podcast, you and I were talking about this. Interestingly, the Mountain West gets one is a one seed league, a one bid league. The Atlantic 10, historically having different powers, they were two bids, so they had an at large. West Coast Conference has two at larges, so the West Coast Conference puts in as many teams as the Big East. But if you start to look just all around the country outside of those Power Four, how many at larges do you have? You have two from the Big East. Zero from Mountain West, one from the Atlantic 10, two from the West Coast Conference, and then one from the MAC, right, from Miami. So I think quick math, that's six total. Is that correct? Six total at-large bids outside of the Power Four teams.
Yeah, and exactly. So it's definitely a changed sport in that regard. And then the commissioner even noted that VCU would have gotten left out if they didn't win their the final in their league championship. So yeah, like even going into that final, St. Louis was the only potential at-large team, and VCU wouldn't have even gotten a bid. So that was interesting. But yeah, it's definitely NIL. And I think if you look at the KenPom ratings of each of the conferences, the SEC, Big 10 and Big 12 seem to go higher every year. And the Big 12's kind of even doing it without the elite TV money that you have in the Big 10 or the SEC. So you give them a lot of credit, and it's even been a bit of a bounce back year for the ACC. They've been super down in recent years, but Carolina with Caleb Wilson being more respectable. Pat Kelsey's doing a pretty good job at Louisville. You got Will Wade at NC State now. So
And
there's a bit of a
Miami, obviously.
Miami, yeah, Jay Lucas in his first year. I mean, gotta really credit him for turning the ship around there. So they're getting more competent, it seems like. But then you even got Andy at SMU, but still not like the ACC of old, where you had the dominant teams with like Syracuse and Boeheim when they moved Big East to the ACC. Like the ACC had a stretch there of 3 or 4 years back about 10 years ago where they were really dominant and the best conference in the sport. But good to see them kind of being, a little more respectable now too.
This is just a little thing I like to keep track of. But so, for these big time conferences, how do you perform in conference, and what are your chances of making the tournament? So, if you finished 500 in conference or above in the SEC, you're in. Every team that finished, they have 18 conference games. Every team that finished 9-9 or better, Texas being 9-9, made the tournament. In the Big Ten conference, every team starting with Iowa that went 500 or better made the NCAA tournament. This was a kind of a this was a metric that I was using for SC before the complete collapse, which we're going to not talk too much about here. But obviously USC collapsed at the end of the season, losing 8 straight. I think we had just lost one game, Troy, when we had maybe had that last podcast. It lost seven more after that, including the conference tournament. But you could imagine in a world where in those final six, USC just pulls out three of those somehow by hook or by crook. SC should be in. They would have had a double metric, right? They would have the 20 wins on KenPom, and they would have had the 10 into the 500 record in conference. So that's really what it seems like you need to do. Indiana finishes just under 500, 9-11, and they were one of the last, was second four out or last four out? I can't remember which one, for Indiana. Big 12. The Big 12, 9-9. So there's 500 records, 18 game conference. Four schools finished 500. One of them was Cincinnati, just missed. Will Wade get their coach gets fired. Virginia also went 9-9, not quite as highly ranked. The other two, UCF, a former mid-major, they're in. BYU, another former mid-major, they're in. No surprise at BYU because they had some big out-of-conference wins. So it's more 50-50 in the Big 12 if you go 500 in conference, but if you win 20 games, I think you're in. So basically, those conferences, if you win 20 games and go 500 in conference, you're in the NCAA tournament. That's what it looks like. That's if we don't expand, because they're talking about expanding this thing, and it seems like it's going to happen. I really hope it doesn't. Just to show you, like USC would have still had a chance to make the tournament anyway after all those losses, because I can believe they did some of the expansions they were talking about. I think they get a little ridiculous. The one team, I think, it might be the only team. This is Trevor. Troy, do you know the only team to make the NCAA tournament as an at-large with a losing record in conference?
Can you give me a hint what conference it is?
It's not one of the ones we just talked about,
Oh man.
but
I don't know.
there's a very strong USC connection with this team.
Is it not SMU?
It is SMU.
No.
SMU finished 8-10, and made it. So ACC is a little behind because you have Florida State going 10-8. They obviously didn't win 20 games. Stanford wins 20 games, goes 9-9. Cal wins 20 games, goes 9-9. They didn't make it in. So you have two teams going 500, one team above 500 doesn't make it in. So I think the ACC is still a notch below those other three. Not surprising, but very close. And then you have in the Big East, obviously, it's kind of a similar story. Seton Hall went 10-10 and did not get in. There's discussions. Everyone else in the ACC just had losing records other than the three that made it in. So you kind of see the blueprint for USC if it wants to make the tournament as a Big Ten team. Got to go 500 or better in the conference, and you got to win 20 games in the regular season, probably. That's what it's looking like.
Yeah, Chase, can we talk about the SMU thing for a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm curious, like, what do you think about their inclusion, right? Because, like, this is a team that lost, what, 13 games overall?
13 games,
They
correct.
were in the ACC. They weren't a particularly lucky team. Like, they were 297 in luck rating. They had a 51 net strength of schedule.
Clearly, I think this has a lot to do with the KenPom. I mean, they say they don't pay attention to KenPom, but that's their best metric, right? They're ranked 42 in KenPom. I'm assuming
Four,
that's.
four, 42 in KenPom. So our strength of schedule on KenPom was 32. SMU's was 51. They
Yeah.
lost 13 games. We lost 14 games. So, we played a tougher schedule. We're in a tougher league. We had one more loss, had two fewer wins.
And we weren't
And
anywhere near the bubble.
we weren't close, right? So, given their inclusion, I have to imagine, we dropped our last eight. But I think if we would have gone 2-6 in the last eight, we probably get a bid.
Oh, probably. Yeah. I mean, really, the story for SMU, I think the story is beating North Carolina and Louisville at home. I think that's the way the story has to work. Those are two quality wins. They won at home. They also beat A&M earlier in the season on a neutral. That's a nice win. A&M is not exactly a talent rich. I know they're going to the tournament here, but they're not exactly a talent rich team. And basically, kind of their best player of the season has been Rashawn Aiki. I mean, Buckeye Mills has done a great job, but not exactly the powerhouse program there to win that game. So you can't be super impressed. But they did beat North Carolina when Caleb Wilson played in that game, right? So they won. They won decisively at home by 14 points. That's a nice win. And Vassar played, and Caleb Wilson played. I mean, that's a really nice win that they had. How good North Carolina really is. You can kind of slight these teams, but it's a legit win. They beat Louisville at home later in the season in February, and then of course after and they dropped their. Four, you know, their games 4 in a row to end the season. Very similar to stuff we saw with Andy at USC, where things are looking really good, and then you just drop all these games at the end of the season when the schedule gets harder. US Musselman this season, the difference is we didn't necessarily drop the games when the schedule got harder. We just dropped the games where the team just kind of fell apart. So
It was
yeah.
an Andy Enfield coded resume, though. Like, you look at it, right? Like,
Oh, very much.
you rack up a large quantity of wins in the non-conference, with a soft schedule. You get like one or two quality home wins, but not like at the elite category where you do it decisively. You drop a few of those quad B road games that you probably shouldn't drop, and it's generally an inoffensive resume. It's this resume that SMU had reminded me so much of some of those USC teams that were bubble teams under Andy, I thought.
Yeah, Troy, any thoughts on that?
No, I completely agree. I completely agree. I mean, I was actually kind of surprised. I hadn't really been following the bubble that closely that SMU got in because I didn't really hear a lot from them. So I guess unless you were looking out for them, you wouldn't really notice that they were any good. And I'm still not sure they're any good. I don't really think like any of that 11 seed situation, Miami, Ohio, SMU, Texas, NC State, I don't think any of those teams are particularly good. So I think the fact that it was such a soft bubble, Andy Enfield got lucky this time with SMU, just unlike he did when he was at USC.
Yeah,
And
and he
I think that's totally right. You look at the first four out, like are you going to include Auburn, which finished one
No.
game over 500, right? I
Or
mean, that's
Oklahoma.
right. Exactly. So there was no clear outlier. Like I thought last year, West Virginia had a tournament caliber resume and didn't get in, and they were kind of unlucky, in that regard, and they had a better resume than I think any of these last four in teams this year. But you look at the first four out, like you're gonna have to put that Indiana team in. I mean, come on now.
Ugh.
Yeah, and if you and when interesting, I have to go back and look at the comps for previous seasons, but there are at least 18, 15, 17 schools from power conferences plus Gonzaga that are going to finish the season because they're going to lose in one more game, right, in the tournament. They're going to finish the season with single digit losses. Starting from the back of the bunch, Villanova, Miami. I guess there's what a minus one. Villanova, Miami, North Carolina, and then St. John's, Arkansas, Nebraska, Virginia, Vanderbilt, Connecticut, Gonzaga, Michigan State, Purdue, Illinois, Iowa State, Houston, Florida, Michigan, Arizona, and Duke. That's a lot of teams that are going to, most of them from major conference, almost all of them besides Gonzaga from major conferences, going to end the entire season with single digit losses. That seems to be like a small number. It just feels it to me. It feels like, there's the haves and the have nots, right? That you're really getting that breakdown to me. And I mean, like last season, okay, here's an illustration. I think we all agree from last season that teams like Maryland and Texas Tech, those are pretty quality teams last year, right? Alabama, pretty quality team. Those teams had nine losses after they lost their tournament game. They ended the season with nine losses. And then you're going to have a team like this season, like Nebraska, that's going to finish the season with seven losses. That includes their big 10 conference loss. And then, North Carolina, Miami is going to finish with just nine losses, assuming they don't win the entire tournament. So, you're really, they've set up this, it really looks like haves and have-nots. USC just needs to make sure it's a have. And I think if USC can do that, they can be in these conversations. This is why I think some of the discussion about, there's these elite teams and non-elite teams. Yes, I get it. Those top seven teams are just look like a cut above everybody else. But some of it is a little bit of fortune. Like, did we really, going into the season, isn't it like if there was not this superhuman effort by Boozer, would Duke really be this? I mean, what if Boozer were to, just ding himself up? He could still play, but he's just going to be 20% less than he normally would. How good is Duke in that game? I mean, Arizona looks superhuman at times, but no one thought Arizona was going to be superhuman coming into the season. In fact, there was a lot of people really talk about vulnerabilities of that team. Michigan, people thought they might be superhuman because of how much they had spent to put together that front court. And people thought the same about Florida. I don't think Florida is superhuman. I think they're beatable. And Iowa State has looked like absolute buzzsaw at different time this year. But then, a lot of that has to do with them just having the right players click. I mean, obviously great coaching and stuff, but for Momcilovic to and I'm hoping I'm not butchering his last name, but his 3-point shooting this year has been in completely insane. And he's not like their best player. So, it's how to get that, it takes a little bit of fortune. So I think you could put together personnel, if you have, even if the coaching is right, you have to spend the money the right way and wisely. I think you can be competitive and really compete these days for national championship. I think it's just a whole new era. That's just my thought. And Nick, you have any thoughts on that?
Well, Chase, let me throw this back at you. So, what do you think the Duke team of last year would have been favored by against the Duke team of this year?
Okay, so if we go just by the KenPom metrics, it's like 1 point, right? But
Right, but there's no way,
let's
right?
talk about they actually those teams actually played each other on the court.
Yeah.
9 points. I don't. The Duke team last year was a
Unreal.
historically an unbelievable team, and in fact, the fact that Houston was able to beat them is kind of a remarkable thing. Florida was in some ways kind of like just a remarkable team with the shooting that they had from the outside. But as far as talent goes, the Duke team was completely insane. And this Duke team, no, I mean, I don't really understand fully how this Duke team does, except for Boozer just looks absolutely superhuman at times. And what he's able, I mean, all credit to him, the way he's able to control his body, the combination of strength and coordination, body control. It's not super athleticism, but he's got this amazing, not super athleticism in the sense that he's, that he's going to jump higher than anybody else or run faster, but his incredible body control and just his mechanics are like perfect and a lot of strength. He's able to move guys out there, just bullying people down low. And then he hits his threes. What he's done is really remarkable, and he's just kind of carried this team to this crazy record. But yeah, I don't see them as anywhere near the Duke team of last year. Tori, what do you think?
Oh, no chance. I probably would have said somewhere around 7.5, something like that. But yeah, I mean that team last year, you can see what Con Knipple's doing in the NBA right now, and obviously Cooper Flagg too. Like they are having really, really good rookie seasons. I don't really think honestly any of these one seeds. I would have said maybe Michigan early on. I know we were talking about how good they were from a KenPom perspective, like or I don't know if it was Evan Mai, I can't remember, like how efficient they were early on in the season, but they've kind of faded off a little bit, and I'm not sure if that's maybe the injury to who was it, Kaysen, or I think LJ Kaysen. And Arizona at times looks really good, but I'm worried about their 3-point shooting because if I think if Braden Burry's and DeLorso don't make shots, then they don't shoot threes and they don't shoot them super well. So I'm a little worried if they just go cold one night, they can lose to anybody. Obviously Houston, I'm very high on Kelvin Sampson, as you may have heard, but that team frustrates me to no end watching it, what it could be versus what it is. But yeah, I think last year, I mean, I loved Florida. I picked them to win last year, and I'm not sure they deserved it quite. I mean, I think Houston probably should have won that game if they didn't, let it go late in the game. But I think the teams last year, Houston, Florida, Duke, are better than any of the one seeds this year, in my opinion.
I don't know. Houston, Florida. So the three of them, not Auburn. I'm assuming you went up to
Yeah,
Auburn.
not Auburn,
I
no.
mean, now Troy, you realize that Auburn had Chad Baker-Mazzara for that team.
That Auburn team last year is a group of characters, including the coach.
It was a group of characters. I did though. I mean, I think Nick, if I'm right, I think I picked. I'm not sure if you did too, but I picked them all the one seeds to get to the final. I think the final four, they got there.
Yeah, I did too, but I had Houston over Florida, so I missed the championship, but pretty close.
We were both pretty close. I mean, we were both kind of spot
You had
on.
the Gators, so I'll give you props on that, Chase. You had that
Well,
right.
hey,
Well
well,
done.
I mean, talk about luck. That took a lot of luck for that pick to come through. But I will say, I mean, I think on paper, here's the thing, what would happen if the Florida team from last year were to play this Michigan team as they stand right now? I don't know. That's a really good question. That Florida team was really good, but they did lose four games during the regular season. And Michigan just lost their third. They beat up a really strong Big Ten. Michigan does have both teams rely on 3-point shooting, but Michigan's 3-point shooting is not as consistent because they don't have as good of guards. But their front court is just so dominant. I mean, incredibly dominant. It's an interesting question. Arizona just looks like everything they do is just like perfect, like even when Texas Tech beat them at home, it was really like a perfect game with a whole bunch of really perfect. I mean, Kansas too, that they both games were close, and they've always just these guys have stepped up and they're playing. Bradley, when it's kind of a joke, oh, he's made Big 12 player of the year, and then he'll like step up and hit these crazy shots when you're like, what's going on? You anticipate Coa Pete's going to be the best player from the freshman, and then Burry's just turns out to have a really an All-American season. Really kind of remarkable what they've done this season. And so yeah, I don't know how Arizona would match up against those teams. That is an interesting question. But I mean, I think on the one hand, those top three teams from last year, I think those are like gold teams and they look amazing. This year, I think there's like seven teams that are I put in that gold category because I put Illinois in there too. And I think you have seven teams that are really could win a national championship in most seasons. And maybe that's the difference. Maybe the very top was better last year, but this year, you've just expanded it from like three gold-plated teams to seven gold-plated teams. They just, and that doesn't include some teams that could compete. Like for example, UConn, in my, my opinion, St. John's potentially, just throwing it out there.
Real quickly on Arizona before you go on. I also have been burnt by Tommy Lloyd so many times when I've picked Arizona to win, and they look so good and so just well-oiled. They have a good, European presence, and it's just like you love the way they play basketball, and then they choke in March. So that's another reason why I'm just a little hesitant. They have not proven it. Tommy Lloyd hasn't proven it. So I think I mean, I love them as a squad, but like I think if they had a different coach, like a more experienced coach that's maybe, like a Tom Izzo, Kelvin Sampson, someone like that, I'd feel a little bit stronger about them.
Yeah, that's a fair enough point. Although they really did, make this bracket for them pretty. I mean, this looks, when Purdue's your number two, I mean, I don't have a lot of belief in Purdue, quite frankly. Okay, well, let's just look at the brackets really quickly. We won't do the in-depth breakdown we've done in previous years. Maybe we just talk about teams we like from the different regions. Nick, why don't we start off with we'll just start with the East. The big headliners there are Duke, UConn, a two seed there, iffy two seed, Michigan State a three seed, Kansas sticking in a four seed there. You have Wisconsin, Tennessee is there, Kentucky is there. Duke obviously has some injury things that they got to figure out, and maybe the guys get healthy. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think, with Duke's region, I think they have the hardest region, but I'm not sure that UConn is the hardest two seed. So I do think they luck out in that regard. But Michigan State's like a, almost a 2B caliber team, even though they're on the three line. I think the challenge there is they have a tough potential eight seed. If Ohio State gets through, Bruce Thorne's a killer guard, and he's really tough to stop. And I think
I think
Mitch.
there isn't Ohio State in the West.
No, or that's the next, game if they win.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What?
That's not fun.
Wow.
No.
Okay.
No, so that would be like a welcome to the round of 32. And if Caleb Foster's out, then I think you're looking at Ohio State with a guard advantage with Thornton against Caden Boozer. And I think these Duke role players, you touched on it, they're just not as good as they were last year. I mean, Isaiah Evans has had a really nice season, but it's not like he's lighting it up from three like Con Knipl did. And Cam Boozer do think shows some vulnerability against elite length. I mean, you saw him against Onyenso, in that ACC championship, and I think he went 3 for 17. So, credit to him for being a good facilitator and getting a lot of rebounds. But the bully ball does have its limits against better interior defense. So that might not be Ohio State in the next rounds, but that could be, St. John's in that Sweet 16 matchup when you look at, Ejiofor and these big bodies that they could throw at Duke. So really tough path for Duke. I think they'll earn it if they get to the Final Four. Yeah, lots of great coaches in that region. So even looking at the UConn UCLA potential round two matchup, I mean, the loser of that game is going to have a pretty animated press conference, I'm sure.
No kidding. Yeah, sorry. I was for some reason my bracket looked a little different there for a second. Troy, your thoughts on the East?
No, I pretty much agree with everything you said. I mean, look, if Duke gets to the Elite Eight or Final Four, they're going to have to likely beat Ohio State, St. John's, and Michigan State, UCLA, or UConn. I mean, those are three really tough games. And I know this is, a pseudo USC podcast, but I think UCLA is really good, and I like the way they're constructed, and they have a lot of good vets. And Donovan Dent, if he's healthy, is playing really good basketball right now. So they can beat anybody, and I would not be shocked if they're playing Duke in that Elite Eight. They beat Michigan State in the conference tourney, right? So they've already shown that they can do that. And UConn is just, I mean, I don't know if it's the Hurley, he's 1-2 and he's kind of, given it up, or I don't know if that's the right term, but he just seems like he's kind of chalked this year and just gets really upset a lot faster than he usually does, which is saying a lot. So yeah, it's a really, I think this is by far the hardest division or bracket, and I'm really excited to see how it kind of takes hold. I mean, you have Kansas too, right? Like I know they aren't the best this year, but I mean, if Darren Peterson decides he wants to play, and I mean, Badunga is really good, and Bill Self is one of the goats, right? So you can't discount them, and that whole top side of that bracket is really tough.
Yeah, and by the way, I disagree. I'm not disagree. I completely agree with UCLA thing. Depending on how healthy Dent is, but I have him over UConn. They could. I kind of think Michigan State would win a rematch if that rematch happens.
Me
But
too.
you, but UCLA kind of, they definitely won that game decisively. It wasn't like it was they won it at the buzzer on a fluke.
And if Thibodeau's healthy too, that's a big thing.
That's a big thing. That's going to really make a big difference, I have a feeling. Okay, let's move over to the West. This is the Arizona bracket. We have Purdue is the 2 seed over there. And then you have Arkansas as the 4, Gonzaga as the 3. I'm not particularly impressed with this bracket. Wisconsin's interesting just because, with Boyd and Blackwell, you never know what those guys might be able to do. I'm not a huge Villanova believer. Utah State, who knows? So I don't know, Nick. Where are you with that? Miami's at the bottom there. They could make some noise. I have a feeling too.
It's a pretty nice drop for Arizona there. Don't think there's going to be, a ton of upsets. I think, the Duke region's the one where you could have some chaos potentially. But really like the drop Arizona. And I think it's a pretty talented Arizona team. You look at some of those past Tommy Lloyd teams, you had like James Akinjo as the lead guard. So, I just think they don't have a lot of weaknesses. They dominate the glass and really like the draw for them. I think, Wisconsin's probably going to be the popular upset pick just because they've taken down some of the Big Ten giants this year. But they shoot so many threes and they're streaky. So, Troy and I kind of chatted about this, but that's the kind of team I typically pick to win one game and lose one game just so I don't get totally burned in either direction. But beyond that, BYU, if they had Richie Saunders, I'd be more excited about them. And then Purdue, I just think they lack some of the elite athleticism. So chance they go to the Elite Eight, but if they did get there and played Arizona, I'd pretty heavily favor the Wildcats there.
Troy, where are you at?
Yeah, this is actually a really interesting one. I love Utah State, and it's a bummer that they're facing Arizona because I think if they were anywhere else or maybe in a different seed, they could probably get maybe to Sweet 16. I think they're really good, even though the Mountain West was kind of shaky this year. That Wisconsin High Point, I mentioned it earlier, that is going to be a 3-point showdown, and it's going to be awesome, and I can't wait to watch it. It could very well be like a 90-90 game, or very well could be like 70-70 with them shooting like 25% each from 3-point. So Hawaii is really interesting. I know they're kind of the defense that doesn't help, which is fascinating, and it's a bummer that they're playing Arkansas, who seems to be peaking right now. But yeah, I think, I mean, the bottom half, Purdue is playing well right now, but I'm just not a firm believer in them. BYU, they'll go as far as AJ DeBonta takes them, and as far as the refs will allow AJ DeBonta to take them, because I think I was watching that Houston game the first half. They were beating Houston pretty good, and that's because AJ was able to get to the line whenever he wanted. But if they tighten it up like the tournament tends to, and don't give those free throws, then they become really one dimensional. And as you mentioned with the loss of Saunders, it's just a super bummer because he's a fun player to watch. And not a big fan of Gonzaga this year. I think they were kind of lackluster, to put it lightly. So I do agree that Arizona does have a pretty nice draw here, and I would project them to go all the way into the Final Four.
Yeah, I like Arizona there, and I'm not sure, I'm not a believer in Purdue. Let's just put it that way. In the South, that's Florida's bracket. So this is, at the top. This looks like really tough at the top. So you got Florida, you got Houston, you got Illinois. After that, maybe it lightens up a bit. Nebraska at the 4, Vandy at the 5. I mean, maybe it does light up a bit. And then North Carolina without Caleb Williams at the 6. Where are you with this, Dick?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you have three teams that could win it. That's Florida, that's Houston, and that's Illinois. And I really like each of their draws to get to the Sweet 16. Florida play the winner of Iowa, Clemson. Iowa doesn't defend. Clemson doesn't have the athletes, I don't think, to match up with the Gators. And then you look at Illinois. I mean, that North Carolina DCU game is probably a coin flip in round one without Caleb Wilson for the Tar Heels. And Illinois, I think, will be very heavily favored against them in round two. And then Houston will get the winner of the St. Mary's A&M. Not exactly a scary set of 7-10s there. So I think, Houston, you're on track for that Illinois Houston. If you get the Florida Houston Elite Eight, that could be really, really good. But Houston does have the edge of getting a home game like there. I think it's a Toyota Center. So, I tend to lean Houston in that matchup. Probably would have said Florida, 36 hours ago, but just didn't really like how Florida looked against Vanderbilt. And that, kind of drew some questions there, but fun region for sure.
Troy, where are you at?
Yeah, I agree. And honestly, I love the concept of Illinois. I really do. But I don't know how it materializes in March very well. So I really think it's actually closer to probably just Florida and Houston that could come out. And if we get a rematch of that national title game was awesome last year. And I do agree, I would probably favor Houston in that. I think it's shocking that Nebraska is a four seed. I think that might be one of the worst four seeds I've seen in recent memory. So I'm happy that Troy is playing them because as USC fans, we saw firsthand how annoying Troy is, but annoyingly good. So I'm hoping, I know they're probably going to be what, probably 8 points or 9 points. I don't know what the spread is, maybe even more than that. But I think Troy could easily upset that and make a little noise there. But yeah, it's not the strongest bracket or part of the bracket, in my opinion. And I think Florida and Houston are by far the two best teams.
I'm gonna surprise everyone and say I kind of like Illinois here.
Wow. I liked them last year. That worked out for me. So.
Well, yeah, unless I like their team better. I mean, there's different reasons for it, but I kind of like their team better this year. But we'll see. I could be totally wrong. Midwest. This is the Michigan bracket. Michigan loses today. It's kind of a surprising loss. Iowa State is a two. Iowa State can look amazing at times and sometimes not as amazing, but usually pretty amazing. Virginia at three. Not sure how much of a believer I am in Virginia. Bama, Bama's played the toughest schedule. I think there's pretty much you can play. They've had some battle scars, but they've won some games. Texas Tech obviously is not a fully healthy team. This is set up pretty nicely, I think, for Michigan. But the Michigan is not like a, they're not a, they're not the kind of like traditional power that you can just kind of pencil in into a Final Four necessarily, just because they have really good players. They've gonna have to go out and get it, and who knows about that? I mean, I could easily see them losing in the second round potentially, but Nick, where are you at with them?
Yeah, I tend to like Michigan in this region. Iowa State's a very respectable too, so if they get past them in the Elite Eight, I think they're going to have to earn it. I would like Texas Tech a lot more if they had JT Toppin, so that's just really unfortunate. I'd probably pick them to maybe go to the Final Four if they were healthy, but that's just a really tough loss. Toppin's awesome, and then Alabama, it just seems like they don't defend at a high enough level, and they're just so up and down and inconsistent. Like their guards, Holloway and Phylon, can really go, and they're so fun to watch. And they have a kind of a surprising one and done, and Amari Allen, who's a really nice wing, but don't think they, they don't really speed you up. Like their defensive turnover rate in KenPom is 362, so they don't create any turnovers, and they don't rebound the glass very well. So I think if they are able to get to Michigan, that's just a brutal matchup for them. Tennessee, I'm gonna get sucked into them, but I love Nate Amendt's development over the course of the year. Started out really slow, but he's super long and talented. Fun to watch. And then Jacoby Gillespie is just a killer guard. Really liked him at Maryland last year. Belmont before that, but senior leader. Bishop Boswell is a great defender at the other guard spot, and Okpara can defend the rim. So I like Tennessee as a six. I think they're 16 in KenPom. Like the draw with Virginia. I think they just have better athletes than Virginia. So I see them getting through to that Iowa State game, which I think could be a really compelling Sweet 16 game. So they'd kind of be my sleeper for this region, but do you like Michigan to ultimately get through?
Where are you at, Troy?
Yeah, same here. I completely agree. Could not agree more on the Texas Tech. I think with Toppin, that coach is so good and gets the most out of his players. And mind you, they lost one of their best players. What was his name?
Top.
Darian Williams,
Oh, in the
to NC
offseason.
State. Yeah, which was like crazy. Like that. Like he was dominating in March last year and carried them so far. So just imagine what that team would look like if Toppin was healthy and he came back. Alabama is super fun, but they frustrate me to no end. I don't know. Like it just seems like Nate Oates can't like control that team. I don't know how they lost to Ole Miss. Like they got dominated for the majority of that game, and they made it way closer than it actually was. Tennessee, agreed. Very veteran coach there, has potential, has a pretty good matchup against Virginia. And I just to drive Chase nuts, I hope Virginia just makes noise because like the concept of that team, I don't know how they're a three seed and I don't know how they're so good, but would be cool to see Malik Thomas though, kind of make a little noise. He was cool when he was on USC. Kentucky, I'm not a fan at all. That Kentucky Santa Clara game is going to be pretty gross, and I hope Santa Clara beats them. Big fan of Iowa State and the concept of Iowa State. I just do not trust them away from home. Granted, they are in the Midwest, so it's not too far away from home, but they just look like Jekyll and Hyde when with the home and the away splits. So I think Michigan got a pretty favorable draw here, and I would probably predict them to go as well.
So I agree with a lot of that. I think Alabama is just, the variance is too high. I mean, they can beat every, they pretty much beat anybody if they start hitting their threes, but that also means they can lose to anybody. So it's hard to win even, you know, three games in a row, let alone, you know, four to get to the final four. You know, I'm gonna get surprised. I'm gonna go with Iowa State here, beating Michigan. I just have a feeling. I have a feeling about the way they've looked and what they can do, the defense they can put up. Could be wrong, but I think Michigan may have already peaked. We'll see. We'll see. I did not
I
like
don't
the
think that's a
way
bad take at all, Chase. I don't think that's
I
bad
did
at
not
all.
like the way Michigan looked today. Okay, we're all going to have our different Final Four teams. So, what, Nick, why don't you tell me who you think is going to play for the national championship and who do you have winning it?
Okay, so I'll just kind of hit my final four really fast. I am going to go with Michigan State, coming out of the East region in a bit of a surprise. I'm going to go with Houston coming out of the South. I'll take Michigan in the Midwest, and then I'll take Arizona in the West. And then for the national championship, I'm going to go with a Big 12 championship rematch of Houston and Arizona. And I am going to pick Arizona to beat Houston for a third time. So I'm going to go with the Wildcats.
Troy, what do you got in the final four?
Pretty similar one. I do have Houston as well, Arizona and Michigan. I did put Duke, and I keep looking at this bracket, and I may end up changing that because of just how hard it is. But I still think that Duke has just found a way to win, and they play really well as a team. And if they can get a little bit healthy, I still think they're one of the better teams. I think as far as who's going to play for the final, I probably will have Arizona and Houston, and I will probably pick Arizona just because again they're just so sound and everybody seems to have their role and they have really good freshmen. It always seems like maybe not Florida of last year, but past the national championship teams have had just one or two really good freshmens that can kind of like hang with the vets, and Arizona is just super balanced that way. But then again, I have to consider Tommy Lloyd and he's burned me so many times, so I'm a little bit jaded in that regard.
Well, we're going to get three for three. I'm going to pick Arizona to win the whole thing as well. So what this is interesting. Three different, completely different people on this podcast picking Arizona in this year of all years. There might be something to that. The difference is I have them beating St. John's in the final.
Ooh,
So that's
I hope I would love to see that.
so a completely different type of game, but that's where I'm at. Okay, can we transition now to talk a little SC depression time stuff?
Let's do
Let's
it.
do it. Okay, so let's first just talk. I want to talk about the collapse in this season. It's been the discussion of so much fodder on the Discord. If you're not on the Discord, please get on the Discord. The basketball discussion there is so great. Don't come to the Discord and discuss stuff though. If you're going to have really dumb takes, I'm sorry, but you know, try to at least you know come and watch stuff. If you know your basketball, we love contributions. If you don't follow basketball and you just post on USC football boards, that's great. We want you to come over and read the Discord and maybe ask some questions. You don't need to give your opinion about how you know Elijah Arenas to still be taking 25 shots a game when his true shooting percentage is below 40. Okay, first question up from Johnny on the spot. Projected NIL budget, any assistant coaches changing possible? Will Musselman still be GM? Is there a schematic or roster building shift, i.e., a type of player we will be emphasizing to bring in happening, or are we just in the quote unquote get better players mode? Okay, great questions. Let me tackle these first, and then I'll throw it to Nick. Nick, I'll have some great info on budgets and NIL spend. I heard last season, I think I posted this on the Discord, that our spend was 15 million. It was hard to like actually, when you go line item by line item, it's hard to understand where that 15 million went. I mean, I think there's a general understanding that Rodney Rice got somewhere between three, less than four, that you know Elijah Arenas cost something but not super expensive compared to like some other you know like a guy like DeBansa. That Chad Baker Bizarre got some money. And then there was like surprising, everyone knows that we had to beat out, I think it was Nebraska or Iowa for Ezra Azar. And then Cornish got some money. I know we spent some on Keontae. I don't know if we actually that went out the door or not. Kofi, I'm just not sure. I heard this number, $15 million. I don't know what that means, and as far as like if that for 1 year of play, I've heard it potentially could be. I don't believe that. I don't believe for a second we spent $15 million on only 1 year of contracts, because I started to break it down, it didn't make any sense. So I'm guessing that some of this money was for 2 years. I'm hoping it's for 2 years, especially for a guy like Rice and a guy like Kofi, particularly Rice. But I don't know that for sure. So, will the portal open up and Rice and Kofi jump in? It's possible. It's possible. I can't say they won't. But that's kind of what I know about NIL. And Nick, do you want to discuss NIL at all?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if it was 15 just for this past year, I think that would be hysterical. But it might be a good thing in the sense that, yeah, I mean, that would put us, right up there with Kentucky for, highest paid rosters in the sport. And, that would be a boon going forward for funding a team for next year. My guess is that figure included, like you mentioned, a 2 year deal for Rice. Like if Rice got 2 and 6, and that would take up 6 of the 15 just right there on that one player. I know Asar, Nebraska thought they were getting in him, and then we outbid Nebraska, so I'm guessing he got close to 175 to 2 if I had to peg that, which is still a lot. I mean, that's a lot for I think the level of production we got. Baker Mazzara, I know that he was making 1.2 at Auburn, and then Auburn gave Keyshawn Hall, I think, 1.8. So then he said, okay, why is he making more money than me? And he jumped in the portal. So I'd probably peg him for around 2 million.
That's the number. That's the number I've heard on him. Now, I heard there was also a buyout cost, but I'm assuming that's absorbed into the final number. I'm assuming we didn't pay a buyout, and he got to keep the original money.
He paid it back when he quit the last couple of games.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine Kofi was that much. Like he had a good freshman season, but can't imagine we broke the bank there. And arena side, genuinely, I have no idea. Like he might have more intel on that. But yeah, I think Michigan, they're going, I think, from 12 to 15 next year, and they certainly had an expensive roster. So it seems like, I mean, Chase, correct me. If you have a different take on this, let me know. I think our NIL is in a very healthy spot, but kind of managing those dollars is going to be very key, because the roster construction, outside of Rodney Rice and Chad Baker Mazzara, just left a lot to be desired this year.
Well, that's definitely true. That's definitely true. I mean, I guess before I get more into Troy, do you want to weigh in on this subject at all?
Well, so I mean, I'm not privy to all the NIL info as you guys are, but you mentioned the roster construction, and I was just wanted to get your guys' thoughts. Chase is really adamant about, how much shooting matters, and I totally agree. And every time I look at a player, I'm like, how would he fit at USC, whether it's a point guard or a 3-and-D person. I see, like, okay, if we get a good shooting point guard that's a little small, then we need a defender at the three. If we get a defender at the three that's not really good shooting, and we bring Kofi back, is that a good enough shooting team? But it's basically just Rice and a good shooting point guard and whoever you bring off the bench. Do you need to have three shooters when our four is probably going to be Kofi, if I were to guess, or, four or five? And he's, I mean, not a bad shooter, but he's not a good shooter. So I'm just kind of curious what your guys' thoughts on the roster construction. Sorry if I
Yeah,
was jumping the
maybe we
gun.
should, let's that's a great question. Let me hit pause on that for 1 second, because there's more questions that are going to go direct on that. I'll tackle that. A couple of people have asked about assistant coaching changes. I mean, I guess they're always possible. I'm not sure what changes. These assistant coaching staffs are pretty large right now. We obviously have Coach Lee, Todd Lee was a former head coach at South Dakota. There's I can't remember the name of the other kind of more gray beard assistant coach on the team. Will Conroy has been assistant for quite a while now. And then we Earl Boykins is new, but then we have Michael Musselman. I mean, I guess we could bring in somebody. I'm not sure this I'm not sure like assistant coaching is really an issue. Maybe other people feel differently about that. But and where are you at with that, Nick?
Yeah, and there's been, a lot of these guys have been with Musk for several stops. You look at Todd Lee and Anthony Ruda, obviously Mike Musk. So I'd be surprised if there was a major turnover in that regard. And, Earl Boykin's coming over. I think he was at UTEP, right? But, his prior relationship with Musk, so I wouldn't expect any major changes there.
Roy, do you have any thoughts on this whole the coaching staff?
Yeah, I think I don't want to say grasping at straws because that's a little harsh, but I think a lot went wrong last year, and I'm not sure assistant coaching being better would have changed anything, or it's not going to change anything drastically in the future.
Yeah, I'm not. I have not yet to be persuaded that assistant coaching is still a major issue.
Head coaching,
Will
maybe.
Musselman still be a GM? Okay, there's actually a bit of a misnomer here, and there was even a post about this in the Peristyle, which was just completely misinformed. Just like Musselman is just completely stubborn about being his own GM, and when that's not true. He actually does have a GM. He uses the GM functions essentially as the negotiator for the NIL deals. So, Chad Bowden's role is a little bit more expansive because I think he does participate in personnel decisions as well, not just negotiations. The GM Musselman uses, generally speaking, he concentrates on the negotiation aspect. Musselman does not handle that himself. At the end of the day, the dollars. That's going to be, it's going to be Musselman's call, but that's not all that dissimilar from Lincoln Riley. Like, Chad Bowden has certain discretions in how he wants to negotiate, but he can't just, Chad Bowden can't just go out and offer, $5 million in the portal to some running back without Lincoln Riley approving it. I mean, Riley's going to have approval of like the kind of the broad strokes of how the NIL is going to be allocated between positions and players, even if Chad Bowden's going to be doing the actual negotiating, Musselman uses a guy to do the negotiations. So it's an outside guy. He specializes in this. I think the big issue with roster construction this past season, I don't think it was the GM from the standpoint of the NIL negotiation. I mean, maybe we got some bad deals here and there, but I think some of it had to do with, I mean, there was a timing issue, and I know that's the case. I know that there was discussions that when Washington came in with their big offer for Wesley Yates, and there was still like some back and forth negotiation. We essentially let him go and went on to the next guy. And then by that point in time, the portal had become very expensive, and we had to spend a lot of money to get Rodney Rice as a replacement to Wesley Yates. Interesting replacement because on the one hand, Rice gets hurt and you don't get to see him this year. The other hand, Yates had a terrible season, was not worth the money either. And if they both would have played the full season, I'm pretty confident that Rice would have been a much better player. But that being the case, I think Yates costs basically 2.2 per season, something like that, for Washington. And we don't really know if Rice is costing 3 million per season or 3 million or 3.5 for 2 seasons. We're just not exactly sure. And I think Musselman was surprised by how expensive the portal had gotten so quickly after losing the Yates situation. And he had initial regrets about that. I think he probably felt better after we got Rice. I would say, obviously, and we'll talk about this in a second. If you want to lock down a player, make that home run offer like right out of the gate, make it like get that guy locked in. I can't remember when exactly Michigan got Yaxel Lindenberg signed on. Did he end up going through the NBA process of withdrawing or no? I can't remember. Nick, do you remember that?
I can't remember either.
But I think you make your hero offers early. So like, Nick, you're you know if you, for you the hero offer is going to be Tyler Tanner, right, for Vanderbilt. Now, look, he's a local kid in the Nashville area, but let's say hypothetically he goes in the portal. That you make if you want him, the moment you're hearing word that he's open to leaving, you offer some huge number. I would say 20, 25% above market, and you lock him in right away. Because the prices are only going to go up from there until the very end. And if you want to go bargain shopping, That's when you do it at like the very end of the process where everybody has spent their money. And that's where you sometimes you do can potentially get deals. How good the players are is kind of a bit of an open question, but that's how PJ Haggerty ended up at Kansas State. That was basically a bargain deal because he hadn't, he missed the high spending wave and everyone had spent their money. So like make your one or two, probably two hero offers out of the gate. We'll talk about who to do that with. And then, then kind of just sit around to try to then, after you've spent a large amount of money up front, then you can wait and try to fill in everything else toward the end. That's the way I would do it, and we'll see how it goes. But this is all going back to the GM question. Or did they handle things perfectly? No. However, this team had a lot of bad luck. Keontae Jones gets indicted and then the indictment gets dropped. Gets indicted on like a 3-year-old arrest and then it gets dropped, right? He was committed. Elijah Arenas gets hurt, right, and misses the entire offseason. So we're not sure how that goes. And then what happened with Rodney Rice and then Marion Dickerson. If you have the team as originally is, there's still some deficiencies there for sure. And guys like Brunell did not like really play to the level that we wanted. But if you have the original team there, I still think not only we're a tournament team, I think we're like a pretty solid top 25 team, with Rice and Keontae Jones and a healthy Arenas. Maybe healthy Arenas, after a while his limitations and you don't play him as much and you're just relying more on Marion Dickerson. Troy, do you have any thoughts on what I just said?
No, I think you're right. I think I agree with pretty much everything. It seems like we have our NIL where we need it, and I think we're gonna, maybe change a little bit what we did last year, but I agree with you being aggressive early on. And if we get Tyler Tanner, I will be a very happy USC fan.
Okay, is there a schematic or roster building shift, i.e., type of player that we will be emphasizing to bring in happening, or are we just getting better players? But I don't know. I don't think any of us know for sure. I'd assume that considering we had a historically bad shooting team, that's kind of, I'm assuming that keeps Musselman up every single night. I mean, we were dead last in the Big Ten in 3-point field goal attempts. So we're not even attempting. So we're giving up wide open looks the whole time, not even attempting threes in these conference games. And then not only were we last in attempts, we're last in 3-point percentage made. So it's like a double whammy. So we're historically bad. I think I looked and like in the last 25 years, I mean, since the invention of the 3-point line, or actually I was going to say since the beginning of the century, not the beginning of the 3-point line. Since the beginning of the century, there's like one or two Big Ten teams that are anywhere near as bad as we were shooting the three ball in conference. So that's an obvious thing we need to correct. You can't really get around that. Nick, any thoughts on this issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to acknowledge the injury situation, but I think it's also important to not use that as a crutch to not evaluate the flaws that even we would have had with a healthy team, right? Like, without Arenas, if you take Arenas out of the equation completely, like, yeah, we did win Maui, but our KenPom did fade from like 22 to, in the 30s in the tournament because, we were really good in close games and got lucky in that regard. So, we weren't a good 3-point shooting team, obviously. We weren't a good 2-point shooting team either. We were 14th in the conference in 2-point percentage. The shooting thing I think would have plagued us all year. Like even dating back to the Arkansas days, like you had a lot of guards like JD Notae and Devo Davis who were non-shooters, and that's just a Mus archetype where he likes drivers and he's willing to sacrifice shooting for driving. And I think, if you take a couple of the shooters off this team, like you did with the injuries, it really shows up as a glaring need. With regards to Tyler Tanner, I have zero insight on that. I was just throwing out that name as an archetype that you should target. Because if you're going to drop bags, I think you're going to want to drop bags on guys that are either the elite one and done talent, or the type of transfer that doesn't go pro, because of some physical limitation, but has shown the ability to be a dominant college player. And I think Tanner fits that bill because he's only 6 feet tall, but you see the quickness, ability to impact games on both offense and defense. And I would put like Abuka Okorie from Stanford in that camp too.
He's
Six
fun.
two. Super fun. I mean, 6'2" lead guard, averaged 23 a game as a freshman, 1.6 steals per as well. But like, if he were 6'5", he'd be a lottery pick. But you have the proven production there, and I think if he tests, he'd probably go second round. But another guy who I think his college value is probably more than his NIL value. So I think those are exactly the kind of kids you want to target in the portal. And it doesn't hurt that they're both at really quality academic institutions, and that USC might appeal in that regard as well.
So where are you at with all this, Troy?
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And just you brought up Maui, just it triggered my memory, and I was looking at who we beat, and none of them made the tournament. So I think that's pretty telling that it wasn't that impressive. As much as it was fun watching it, it just wasn't that impressive. Probably should have given us a bit of an insight on how the season was going to happen or gonna occur. But yeah, I agree. Find people with physical limitations, because those are really good college players. And I know USC's had a really good track record of producing pro talent, and which is pretty remarkable if you look at the stats. But I mean, for us, I care more about being good college basketball teams. So if we could, transfer a little bit of that success from the pro level to the actual college level, I would have no qualms about that.
Yeah, so from where the I guess we can get into what kind of players I'm looking to, who I would look to potentially target. I mean, there was a question about Chance Westry. Technically he's supposed to be a senior, but he missed the entire season, so I'm not sure why he's being listed as I don't know if he had a year before he played at Auburn. He had a nice season for UAB this year. He's played at different schools like almost every year, so he potentially could be in the portal. He's another, he had a nice season and he had a lot of assists for a 6'6" guy. But another guy that, shoots 24% from 3-point line. So, to me, if I'm looking at this team, especially since we kind of have a general idea of what Russ has tried to build, I'm assuming Dickerson will be back. We have some athleticism. I'm guessing Dimes will be back. I'm just not sure where Dimes would go. And then we have the Ratliff twins coming in. I think you just need to find another guard that can shoot to play right next to Rice. I think Rice can actually play point guard. He actually had a really nice assist to turnover ratio. I think I just let him play point guard and find somebody to play next to him as a shooter. We've talked on the board about Dre Gibbs, Lawson. Is it Lawson? Law?
Lawhorn.
Law? Yeah. At UNLV. One of those shooters to me would be, a guy, somebody that I would look at very strongly. It's hard to say, you get only one guy to look at, but find guys that hit threes, hit them in high volume, and that can, that they can play, they have some level of athleticism. And in DGL's case, he played at Illinois. He looked pretty athletic. So that's what I would that's what I would look be looking at personally. But that's just my opinion. I think you need to pair that depending on what we have coming back, if Kofi returns, whatever. I think you do need one more dominant player down low, a guy that can score. Ezra was an interesting player. I wonder what he had his own limitations, obviously, but his scoring around the rim just completely collapsed after Chad got hurt, and basically we had no 3-point threat at all. So nobody was paying any attention to him. And at that point in time, it's not really, we're not really much of a outside threat, and teams are just collapsing on the interior. So we do need, I think, a little bit more of a presence down there. There's a not a lot, but there's quite a few interesting bigs that are going to be hitting the portal. I'm assuming some of them have their coaches been fired, others have been rumored by Troy Donovan. So if I'm out, if it's me, I'm making these hero offers like now, right now, to those agents, to have those guys enter the portal, not even, with a no contact, and just like, hey, this is where we're going, because these guys have offered us 25% above market, one shooting guard, a guard that can shoot, maybe a combo guard that can shoot, and a big who can defend the rim and score. And that's what I'm doing. Troy, any thoughts?
Yeah, so what you're saying is like a combo guard. So the first person that like I was just thinking of the player you're describing, I was like, wouldn't Boogie Ellis be an awesome combination with Rodney Rice? In my
With
opinion, I
Rodney
think
Rice, absolutely.
that would be
Well,
such a
yes,
fun combo.
absolutely.
He can shoot from not like just the 3-point line, but beyond the 3-point line. You always like to see that in college game. So what you're saying is like a starting five, a starting like combo guard 1-2, however you want to phrase it, and then keep Kofi. keep Rice, and then are we just rocking with Arenas and Collins at the three, or what are we doing at the three?
Well, assuming we get Collins. I mean, I'm assuming
Yeah.
if we're gonna get Collins, we're gonna have Dickerson, hopefully. I don't think you I do think you want another kind of
Right.
guard to play in the trio that can shoot. The Arenas thing is interesting. I know this is gonna
Yeah.
probably drive Nick absolutely insane, but he had an interesting social media post about him wanting to lead the nation in college and scoring.
Me too.
He's already
Is that is that
taking
is that Division One, or where are we talking?
I'm pretty sure he's talking about playing in the Big Ten and doing this, Nick. So
Okay. Hey, stream big.
yeah. But yeah, so he's teeing. I can already see him teeing. I don't know if he's gonna stay or not, but he's definitely teeing up that he's gonna come back. It kind of makes sense because yeah, if he's kind of gone into the abyss. If he enters this draft, he's highly unlikely to go in the first round, in my opinion. I mean, anyone can look at like the what he played, how he played this year. You're talking, GM that takes him, taking a super flyer, they're going to pass on a much better player, much better proven player who's still pretty young. So hard to believe that he would actually enter the draft under these circumstances. Plus, I mean, I know Gil wants to push him into the draft and all that, but does he really want to push him into a draft where he's like into no man's land? He wants to push him into a draft where he's like the guy, probably, right? Not where he's being pushed into no man's land. That's my guess. Next year, he'd have a much better chance on next year's draft. If you were able to, learn play basketball a little better, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But yeah.
Well, I think while we're on the topic of Arenas too, like it was a horrendous season by any metric on offense or defense. He was lost on defense, totally disinterested. The shot selection was a disaster. But I don't want to act like he has no tools, 'cause clearly he does. I mean, he's got a lot of length, size. He's very good at drawing fouls. Like he draws 5.9 fouls per 40. Pretty good foul shooter once he gets there. So like, the best part of his game is really the ability to use craft to get to the rim and get to the line, right? But the mid-range twos are an automatic mess. The 3-point percentage is a complete disaster. The handle needs a lot of work. So he's a raw ball of clay. And I don't think the like I want to lead the country in scoring is the right mentality at all. Like maybe if you want to go to Pepperdine and LMU and try to score 30 a game and shoot 25 shots, go do that. But if leading the country in scoring is the goal, then and he's on USC, and then we're not going to be very good next year, just straight up.
So that leads to the next point of, what do you need? I think you need one more guy in that backcourt who can play the two, maybe play a little three, who also can shoot. He doesn't need to be necessarily a clear starting level player, but you need another guy there that you can put into the game, can shoot. I don't think it could be Jordan Marsh in the rotation. Me personally, I don't think he's quite that level player because you put him in there and top teams are going to pick on him. He immediately becomes a source to get picked on for defensively because he's so small. It's hard for him to match up defensively. And he's not quick enough to actually like create turnover. For someone that's his size, he should be like getting like over two steals a game, right? And he's not really playing at that level, in the Big Ten. So that's where I kind of think that's what we would need, Troy, to answer your question.
Okay.
Question. Let's see. Expected impact of Learfield, if any. What is Learfield? Does anyone know what
Oh,
that means?
isn't that? It's like the. Oh, what? It's
A
not
director's
NIL,
cut
right?
or something,
Yeah. No,
right?
it's like a something to do with money. I remember someone talked about this.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, is that the new, that's the new like media deal or something?
Yeah, I think something like that. Yeah.
That, you know what? Look, that's a great question. Obviously, from my answer, you can tell I have no idea. So I'm not going to pretend to know if that's
Sports
okay.
marketing,
If
yeah.
anyone has an idea about this, please, let me know too. And I'll talk about it on the next podcast. Yeah. So, I mean, last, who should we prioritize to bring back and what cost for each player? Me personally, easily. First of all, I do want some semblance of stability in the program. So I would bring back every single player that could possibly come back if you can get them. Obviously, you don't want to overpay too much to get them, but you want to bring back Rice and Kofi is an outstanding defensive player. I think you match him with the right players, he can be really, really good. You absolutely want to bring them back. You want to bring back Amarian Dickerson to give you that athleticism, my opinion. But then the other guys, Dines, Jerry, Marsh. I'm assuming Dines would be the most likely to come back of that bunch. I can't say for sure, but that's I take them all back. I think those other three, though, you just got to be careful what you're paying them. And also, you got to spend all your money on the top nine players for sure. Top nine players, spend all your money. Nick.
Yeah, no, I think it all comes down to, what the dollar figure is. Like Marsh strikes me as the kind of guy who could transfer to like a lower end power five school and potentially start like Wake Forest, right? Like if Marsh transfers to Wake Forest, I could see him playing 20 to 25 minutes a game. And so like I think it depends on the number there. Obviously there are size limitations there. I think with Jerry, what's tricky is he's gonna have to transfer down if he wants minutes because he hasn't proven that he can be a starter on a power five team yet, especially from a shooting standpoint. So I could see him going to like an Akron or an Ohio U or something like that closer to home. You could stick it out at SC and fight for minutes, but could be in the same situation that he is at the end of this year while having one less year of eligibility, which would be tough. Dines, I just don't know. Like, does he transfer back down to the mid-major level and start? Could he go to like Purdue and be like a backup center there? Just hard to say. I don't really have a grasp on that market. And then Arenas, right? Like a big wild card. I'm sure he's gonna ask for a lot of money. I wouldn't give it to him, but it must has a special relationship there, having Coach Gill in the NBA. But then you have the extra Gill factor of Gill criticizing, the dismissal of Chad Baker-Mazzara, which was pretty interesting and hilarious there. So I have no feel for that situation, but I would not want to give Elijah Arenas millions of dollars, just period.
Where are you at, Troy?
Could not agree more. It was extremely frustrating. And I'm big on, and this is more of like a me metric, I guess, but just like a winning basketball player, the concept of a winning basketball player in college. And he is quite literally the antithesis of that. Nothing he does is contributing to winning other than that miraculous, what was it, against Penn State, that I don't know how that went in. But yeah, it just, it, we cannot be devoting so much time and resources and just like effort into keeping him. I don't think I don't think we need to be like stressing about that. We just need to be finding really good basketball players that fit our roster construction. And right now he just doesn't. I mean, you mentioned all of his weaknesses, and it's exactly what we like don't need, right? We need shooters. We need someone who can play the three and defend and shoot, and he can't really do either of those things.
Yeah, and I'm just gonna I would just add one last comment on that. I'm 100% behind. Basically, I would just go ahead and put the team together and spend all your money with the assumption that he's not coming back. And then if he wants to come back, go try to raise the money special just for that purpose.
Love it.
You know,
Yep.
but just put the team together and say, hey, look, this is our team. We're not, we're gonna go get two guards or whatever. And if he wants to. If he wants to come back, there will be people who will step up to pay money for him in NIL. It probably is the case. So that's where I'm at. Okay, we've run really long. Troy, thanks so much for joining us. Let's plug your podcast on YouTube. You just finished your list of the 30 most important players for football this upcoming season. Everyone should be checking that stuff out. It's just a great YouTube for YouTube content. I know I've said this before, but man, YouTube content for USC football, it's not good, but Troy's is awesome. So, and you had another you had some other content earlier on just a couple weeks ago on just trying to evaluate if we had strong, how do we really evaluate our short yardage rushing. Just amazing statistical content, really bright. Anything else on the horizon you want to talk about?
Yeah, I appreciate it. We're coming up on 900 subs, and the goal is 1,000 by May, so it's within reaching distance. So we'll see if it what happens. But yeah, I plan to do a little bit of some Big Ten previews, probably, probably some over under win totals. I think that'll be fun, and then position previews, and then closer to the season, we'll probably start doing the actual predictions and videos like that. But I'm really excited. It's been a really fun year. living out a dream like that. And it's just one of like a passion of mine, as you know. This is all a passion project for all of us. So just really glad that we can do it and, give some people some fun stuff to listen to.
Nick, any thoughts before we get out of here?
Just a quick shout out to the United States for beating the Dominican Republic in
Oh,
the
nice.
WBC. So yeah, so going to the finals here. So yeah, USA. Woo. Just happy March to all the listeners. Thanks for all the questions, and hope everybody enjoys the first couple rounds here this week.
Yep, reiterate the same. Fight on to everybody. And hopefully we'll be back soon, and there'll be better news, because last time we had a podcast and we didn't have one afterwards, we never won another game.
That's
So
my
hopefully
bad.
that's it.
I hand up accountability on that one, Chase.
Yeah, it's basically an entirely your fault, Troy. Nothing to do with the performance of our players or coaches, nothing, just all you. All right, guys, until then, everyone fight on.
On.
See ya.